home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore, positively into an all-star game week, all-star break. A little weird, this whole battery thing down in Atlanta. It's the only stadium I've never been in. I've even been in Arlington, almost got thrown out at one point, but I did go into the new Arlington Stadium. So Luke and I, in previous years, we'd be down there, it'd be 112 degrees, hotter than Georgia asphalt. But there would be Waffle House involved and probably some really good peaches, although my wife's been getting some really good peaches here at the farmer's market. I tell you who's a peach, Mike McKelvin over at 1623 Brewing, worked at WBAL with Vince Bagley and all that. I love getting together with him, telling some old Chris Thomas stories. We're going to be doing that over some ice cold refreshments on the day after the All-Star game. Wednesday, we will be in Eldersburg at 1623. I got a handful of these Back to the Future scratch-offs. I'm kind of waiting out the Ravens ones. I'm going to get the Roz over to Maryland Lottery. Friday, we're going to be doing breakfast at Zeke's Coffee in Lauraville. I will have a full house there. Cal, former deposed cartoonist for the Baltimore Sun, as well as Dan Rodericks, deposed columnist from the Baltimore Sun, as well as Rasig, always welcomed cartoonist and a coffee drinker. And Thomas Rhodes, we're going to talk about coffee. We'll be at Zeke's Coffee on Friday. And my Eldersburg show is going to be great because I'm wearing my Geddy Lee, Major Lee Baseball. I know you dig this shirt. I mean, some people think this is a little freaky deaky, but it's cool. I'm a Geddy guy. I think about this Eldersburg thing and the Live Aid, the juice was getting squeezed out of that all day Sunday. Luke, you were born the year before Live Aid or year and a half before Live. Does Live Aid mean anything to you being a rock and roll guy? Or is just did you watch the Ozfest from Wildwood? I mean, I need to know because you do have a little bit of a musical heart.
I did not, but I will tell you what in was it 05 that they did Live 8?
Live 8 was in 8, I thought, right?
So
was it 8 or 5? I don't either one. It was in Philly.
I'm pretty sure it was 05.
Okay.
Right? Because I guess it would. At that point, it would have been, what, the 20th anniversary?
20th, right.
Right. So I'll tell you, it's funny because I was actually getting to Wildwood. It was that Saturday. And if you recall, Pink Floyd played. Roger Waters reunited with Gilmour and Richard Wright and Nick Mason, and they played. And that was the summer, you know, my father had passed away the previous November. And, you know, we're just
July 2nd, 2005. You are, yeah. You're always right about dates. I never just argue a date with Luke Jones.
But because it resonated so much with me, because this is the first time that Roger Waters had played with the rest of Pink Floyd. My goodness, you would know better than I would, Nestor. It'd been decades, right? I mean, so they played together, and that was what? 8 months after my father had passed away. I mean, it was emotional for me sitting there watching it on TV, but it was for my mom and my brother and sister too. So yeah, I remember that, but Live Aid, the original, I was not quite 2 years old, but I do remember that, you know, but 20 years later, because of that being the very, very, very rare time, you know, really maybe the only time in my lifetime that, you know, we've seen Pink Floyd reunite. And so obviously that ship long sailed long ago, but it's pretty special. But yeah, the original, I don't have any memories of, unfortunately.
I went drinking with Joe Buck the night before. Strangely enough, I was supposed to see Brian Adams play at the Camden Shed, and I spent the night in Philadelphia, and we walked up to the Four Seasons and went into the bar, and it was all rock stars. Dave Matthews Band, all these people were in there. And Joe Buck walks in, and I'm the only guy in the room Joe Buck recognizes, and Joe Buck's the only guy in the room I recognize in Philadelphia. And we wound up sitting down, and my wife looked at him and said, slam-a-lam-a-ding-dong. She said that to Joe Buck over after he bought us beer and a charcuterie, as I remember. So last time I saw Joe Buck in a while. And that's not true. I saw Joe Buck at the night that Pichotti and Eric DaCosta ran for me out on the veranda. Joe Buck came out of that kickoff video and said to me, "Did you see that? Were you in there?" He didn't understand the new kickoffs.
That's funny.
We're going to kick off football season. Right now, we're going to kick off All-Star Game Week. We're going to have some fun, some beer. I just bring up the Live 8 story, a Live Aid story, because I attended Live Aid. My dear friend Richard Abrahams and his brother David Abrahams are going to be coming over to 1623 with all of their London paraphernalia. They were at the London Live Aid. I was at the Philadelphia Live Aid. John Allen was probably on a stage at Scandals in Ocean City playing with Child's Play at that point. But we're all going to get together and talk some rock and roll out in Eldersburg on Wednesday. So day after the All-Star break, why not have some rock and roll conversation out in Eldersburg? Probably going to talk about some beer and crab cakes in Carroll County as well. All right, you and I did the Kyle Stowers thing. We did the Elias kind of sort of trade thing, maybe, and O'Hearn a little bit. If there's anything you want to get on the All-Star game or Atlanta, let's do that now because we got Ravens starting in a week, and that's going to like overshadow all the trade deadline deals and whatever happens. Because to your point, nobody here is expecting a blockbuster, right? Like, we're not expecting Rutschman and Kowser to be dealt off for Bobby Witt, right? I mean, we're not, there's none of that that's going to happen next week. It's going to be piecemeal. O'Hearn for a bag of donuts, Sagano, if Eflin's healthy, if somebody wants to bet on him, take his money. Like, there, the fire sale part of where it began with Brian Baker, and we analyzed that one for longer than we probably should have. But it's the beginning of the rebuild for opening day of next year. And I'll tell you what, dude, if there's nothing else that I'll kick off after the Kyle Stowers thing here during an extended All-Star break, in Rodgers, that would be a reason to keep Elias Ren and think he's a genius because Rodgers might be their opening day starter next year. He might go 8-2 the rest of the year with a 2.5 ERA and be Dallas Keuchel. He might be.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important not to try to look at all this as a binary kind of thing, yes or no. I mean, with
It's
Mike
always
Elias,
moving. It's Robbie
yeah,
Mayo's
exactly.
moving right now. Kyle Stowers is moving right
Oh,
now, right?
and I mean, going back to when Brandon Hyde was traded, I said to you, I wrote it at the time at BaltimorePositive.com. I mean, for me, from that point, when they weren't 18 under 500 at that point, but they were what, 14 under, whatever it was when they canned Hyde, I. Looking at it realistically, understanding that they weren't going to save their season at that point in time, I said all along, my biggest objective, forget about the trade deadline or anything like that, get your young core pointed in the right direction the rest of the way. And, Trevor Rogers wasn't someone that I had in mind, but there's a perfect example of something that isn't saving their season, but can make you feel better about 2026, right? So
Well,
you kind of
Bradish
look at
coming back and making seven starts would do that
exactly.
too, right?
Exactly. Kyle Bradish, or we'll see where Grayson Rodriguez is. I mean, all of that, right? I mean, how about Adley Rutschman coming back and continuing where he left off in June, where it was the best he'd looked at the plate in about a year. So there's a lot with that. But one thing I want to go back to the Baker thing, just for one element of it that you and I didn't touch upon in our previous discussion. And it has nothing to do with Brian Baker himself, but it has to do with the fact that there was club control left with him. So, as much as we've all talked about O'Hearn, Mullins, you mentioned Sagano and Eflin, I'll throw Charlie Morton in there because Charlie Morton's pitching way better than either of those guys right now and is also a pending free agent. We've talked about the relievers, whether we're talking about Dominguez or Soto or Andrew Kittredge, who there's a team option attached to him, but you look at his age, you question, is he going to be back? So I think those are the obvious names that we point to. As it pertains to the trade deadline. But with Baker being someone being dealt that has club control, I think that's where it is a little interesting. And look, I wholeheartedly agree with you. They're not going to trade, and you and I, it almost became a running joke that we would keep bringing up Colton Cowser as the example. They're not going to trade anyone like that, I don't think, right? I mean, they make a trade of that magnitude. It's probably something in the offseason, right? It's probably you're dealing a couple young position players to get pitching, right? Something of that nature, which I just don't think that's going to come to fruition in the next couple of weeks. I think that's going to be a over the winter proposition, if anything. But if you deal Brian Baker, what's not to say that in the right for the right offer, Ramon Laureano could be traded, right? I mean, look, Laureano's been a fantastic addition of all the signings that they made. That didn't work out this past winter. Laureano at $4 million. I mean, that was great. And they've got an option. So that said, do we all look here with a full conviction that he's going to duplicate what he did this year, next year? And that's where you look at it and say, look, I'm not, let me be clear. I'm not looking just to trade him just for the sake of doing it. But if there's a team that has a real need for an outfielder and they're willing to give you something that's quite attractive for Ramon Laureano, then I'm probably doing it, right? I mean, it's again, not something middling, something where you say, oh, basically what they did with Baker, where they say, The Rays want to give us the 37th overall pick. I get it. That's not going to be something that helps us next year, but that could be really, really attractive for us 2 or 3 years from now. I think Laureano's in that category. I think Ramon Urias is in that category, even though he's not a pending free agent. I think Dean Kramer, I'd put in that group. I'm not saying I'm inclined to trade him, but if there's some team that wants to value Dean Kramer for more than what he is, I'm at least listening. And, I think the name that's on the higher end that I'm not buying for a second that they would actually do, but some people have mentioned Felix Bautista again through the lens of if someone absolutely overwhelms you with an offer, do you consider it? Right? So I just think the
Well, they
Bakers,
got Cano and Povich out of, a
Jorge
relief pitcher
Lopez.
2 years ago.
Yeah, who's been DFA'd multiple times since then, right? I mean, there's volatility there. So I'm not, this is not me advocating to deal those guys that I just mentioned, but I think the fact that they did deal Baker, I think
Tells you where their headspace
it
is.
at least tells you they're willing to listen on guys be that are under team control beyond this year. And I just think that
Well,
it's
that's why I
interesting.
brought up even
Yeah.
Couser and Rutschman. I mean,
Sure.
let's play a game here that if I were over at 105.7 and trying to get phone calls today and I had to,
And it is
stir
All-Star
things
break.
up,
It's All-Star break week. It's
if I
slow,
had to
right? Yeah.
stir things up here this week, if I were like locking four and just shooting off my mouth all day, really a pot stirrer. If all the general managers got together and they decided to disband the union and put all the players out and they had a new draft. A draft for players, not money, but a draft for players you'd want to have on your team. Adley Rutschman was a 1-1 as a 20-year-old player, 21-year-old player, competing with 17, 18, 19-year-old players. They said, you're the best player, unquestioned. Everybody loved the pick, all that. Not everybody liked this kid that the Nationals took as well. And all the money and the slotting and all the ghost of Mike Flanagan and Peter Angelos come back to me when the worst teams aren't getting the best players. And that's a whole that was all I gathered from watching the draft on Sunday night is how broken the sport is when the worst teams don't pick the best players. And because they can't afford them or feel like they want to be cheap or the pool money, whatever the excuse is, the Nationals did not get the best player. Now, that being said, where would Adley Rutschman get picked? If all the general managers could get together right now and pick players, whether it's Mike Trout, whether it's Ohtani, whether it's Aaron Judge, whether it's Bobby Witt, because you're buying, green bananas and think the next, what am I buying the next 5 years out of this player? I mean, Rutschman's 26, 27, right? In the
27.
middle of the wheelhouse, wherever you think he is, he's got next 5 years, got tread on him, wherever you are. Dude. I think he has played himself back to being a third round draft pick or fifth round draft, like not even 1-1 or first round, but he's not an aircraft carrier. I love that I heard all of that jargon for the
That's a
first time in a
GM
while.
term. Yeah, that's a
Yeah,
GM
I
term.
heard that jargon on Sunday night for the first time in a while. Aircraft. Who are the aircraft carriers? Now, Henderson would get picked. Westberg would get picked. I mean, Rutschman would be sitting around like the left-handed kid in my little league in wiffle ball, he'd be sitting up against the wall because no one would pick him right now. And that's what you're talking about with trades, right? Like, who's going to pick that player for this player? How do I trade you this for that? I mean, it's really no different than little league pick 'em. And if Rutschman were involved, he wouldn't, stock's way, way, way down. There'd be people that say, give me Mayo first over the next 5 years. I'll fix him. Give me Stowers. I'll fix him.
I think it's always more complicated when you are talking about a catcher because, for me, look, let's look at Adley Rutschman for what he's actually been this year. His defense has been better than it was last year. The metrics support that. So the defense has trended up. Offensively, has he been better than he was in the second half of last year? No question. But has it been what he was in 22 through the first half of last year? No. I think you still have to recognize catcher being a premium position in terms of there aren't a lot of catchers that give you a whole lot offensively. So I think he would still be more highly regarded than you might think. But yeah, I'm not going to sit here and try to say, oh, 1-1, you took him over Bobby Witt, right? With hindsight being 2020. So, as far as your exercise, I mean, It's tough because, you know, I mean, are we looking at it through the lens of an expansion draft, or, you know, trying to look at what he would project as, what would he be drafted? I mean, I think we also need to understand what the baseball draft is, right? We talk about this with every sport where there's an unknown, there's a certain element of art that still goes with it as much as you try to make it a science. You know, that's the kind of language the Ravens have used for years and years and years. As much as they look at analytics and they have player tracking data and they have modeling and they look at 25 years of past drafts to try to look at what works, what doesn't work, what's a smart thing to do, what's not a smart thing to do. I mean, it's one reason why the Ravens hardly ever trade up anymore, because history suggests unless you're doing it to get a quarterback, it's a losing proposition more often than not. And it is, even when you take a quarterback, but when you need a quarterback, you need a quarterback, right? So that the rules kind of go out the window under that scenario. So, but I guess the point I'm trying to make is I think Adley Rutschman still has value. I think he's still perceived favorably, but not where he was 2 years ago. I mean, that's
You're not
a
getting
captain.
Paul Skenes for him, dog,
Yeah, I
you
mean,
know?
it's a Captain Obvious statement. So, you know, and that's where I think it's kind of interesting where they're going to be, not so much the trade deadline, because again, I fully expect we're going to see them make multiple trades, but I don't know if they're going to be able to trade Eflin. I don't know if they're going to be able to trade Sagano. You know, Charlie Morton, I think they can trade all things being equal, but is a team going to want to take on the money? Are the Orioles going to be willing to throw in an extra $1.5 million in the deal, and they might get a better prospect in return? So, you know, O'Hearn will absolutely be dealt, you know, barring something bizarre happening. Cedric Mullins, I think some team will take him on, but let's face it, let's call a spade a spade. Cedric Mullins has not played very well since, what, the second week of May. Go look at his numbers since then. They're ugly. So, you know, you go down the list. I mean, Kittredge, Dominguez, and Soto, will they be able to deal, say, at least one or two of those guys? Sure, I would venture to say they can. Will they trade all three of them? I don't
Was Austin
know.
Hayes hitting the cover off the ball when they dealt him off last year or no?
No. I
Yeah, I
mean,
mean, so like, you know, a little bit of it is your buy-in potential is all you're
sure.
buying if you're in the pennant race here. You're not
Sure.
buying a sure thing no matter what.
Well, and that's why, and obviously it's not something we touched on because it happened a little while ago, but the knee injury for Gary Sanchez. I mean, say what you want. I mean, I don't think anyone wants to see Gary Sanchez as their full-time catcher, right? And the Orioles were in the position that he was their starting catcher because Adley Rutschman was on the IL. But until he got hurt, the one thing you can say is what? He was hitting the heck out of the ball. So was there a deal to be made for him? You know, where if the Orioles, again, if they're willing to throw in $1 million with, you know, with Sanchez, could you have gotten something for him? Sure. I think that would have been plausible. But now when he's out, as long as he's projected to be out, I assume that's not going to happen now. You know, Ryan Mountcastle, there was a scenario 2 months ago where I would have said, maybe Mountcastle can get on a heater the way that he's apt to do, and you can deal him at the trade deadline. But he's been hurt. You know, he's been out 2 months with a hamstring injury, and wasn't hitting before then. So he has zero trade value right now. So, you know, you kind of look at it through that lens. I just think it's interesting, you know, because of what they did with the Baker trade, that the fact that he wasn't nailed, you know, he wasn't someone that was coming off the books, right? I mean, he was not a pending free agent, but they got something in return that they said, hey, this is worth it to do this.
Well, these guys that don't have options too become a lot less valuable,
And that's
right?
the other thing too. I mean, especially in the bullpen, Nestor, we've seen this, and we even saw this at times with the Buck Showalter era, where and obviously things were different then. You couldn't option guys, or you could option guys at will then. Now you have a limit on the number of times you can send someone to the minors and all that. But we all talked about, that's when we first started talking about the Norfolk shuttle. I mean, Duquette and Buck would have. You know, they'd have guys on a taxi squad. They'd have a reliever staying in a hotel in whatever city they were playing, knowing that they were going to had every intention of activating that guy a day or two later, just because they did it from a strategic standpoint. So it's nice to have optionable pieces in your bullpen. And at times, the Orioles, when they've had flexibility, generally speaking, their bullpen has been, I want to say, better, but it's had more flexibility, and you're able to maintain it better. You're probably able to sustain better because you have, you know, you can cycle in some long relievers that can give you innings when you're in a position where, you know, you have a blowout, you know, good or bad. But when you have a bullpen full of guys that are out of options, man, it makes it tough. I mean, it's one reason we saw them option Yennier Cano a few weeks back, right? I mean, I don't think they optioned Cano because they thought he was pitching horribly, even though he hasn't had the year that he had a couple years ago, of course. That was way more that their bullpen was fried and they needed a fresh arm at the time. And he was kind of not pitching great. And they said, okay, let's send him to Norfolk for a respite and we'll get a fresh arm and he'll be back up here in 2 weeks. And that's how it ended up playing out. So I just think you have to keep an open mind with the trade deadline. I mean, all the guys that are on expiring deals, it's easy to say trade those guys, right? And they're going to trade those guys. And, you know, if they come away with a few pieces that can help them over the next couple of years, then great. But I think it is interesting to at least entertain the possibility of, you know, if some team comes calling and really needs a right-handed hitting outfielder because their guy just went on the IL, right? And I don't know who that team is. I'm just, you know, I'm speaking in generalities, but Ramon Laureano, he's batting 284. He's got an 867 OPS. He's been fantastic. Nestor, I'm not going to bet my mortgage that Ramon Laureano is going to do that again next year, as he's going to be in his age 31 season, based on how he's performed over the last 3 or 4 years. So
But do
that
you
doesn't.
think he's a pile driver? Do you think he's a fourth outfielder? Is he a
Well,
guy you want to keep around in case whatever? Guys have been getting hurt, cows or all this
and
stuff,
let me be
right?
clear. All things being equal, I'm fine if you want to do that. And I'm fine planning on that. My point is,
Sign another one in the
if
offseason,
the
right?
phone rings and someone wants to give you way more than what you think Ramon Laureano is actually worth, then I think you need to do it. That's what I'm saying here. I'm not eagerly seeking out trading Laureano or Arias or Dean Kramer or certainly not Felix Bautista, but I'm at least taking the phone call, is what I'm saying, right? I mean, this organization's not in a position. I mean, it's a last place team. They're 9 games under 500. There are only a few guys on this roster right now where I'd say, no, I'm not trading that guy, right? I mean, very few guys on this roster I'm saying, no, I'm not trading that guy. My whole thing with our banter that we've had about Colton Cowser has been much more anchored in the thought process that I don't think that's the kind of deal you're going to make at the trade deadline. I think that's a deal that's made in December. If there's a deal to be made where you trade Colton Cowser for a pitcher, right? So that's where more so my argument has been. But other than Gunnar Henderson and Jackson Holliday, and I'd be in agreement with you. I mean, I think Jordan Westberg is really, really close to that category too. I mean, the only thing holding me back is he just needs to stay on the field and stay healthy, right? And you think about his injuries, other than the hamstring, last year he had the broken hand hit by a pitch. I mean, that's not like, oh, that guy's in bad shape. He's injury prone. You know, snake bitten maybe, but not something where I question his health and conditioning and all of that. And the same thing with him sliding head first. But, you know, other than those three guys, you know, I'll hear an offer for just about anyone, right? But that said, realistically speaking, that doesn't mean they're going to trade a dozen guys from the roster, right? I mean, I think if I had to set an over under, and you know, go look at the obvious ones: O'Hearn, Mullins, Morton, Sagano, Eflin, Kittredge, Dominguez, Soto. Guys that you would trade if you get any kind of an okay offer for. You know, that's eight guys right there. I'd still set the over under on trade. You know, those guys being traded probably what, 4.5 maybe, right? I mean, I think you said five guys being traded. I mean, I think that sounds about right because it's not easy to do it, right? I mean, it's tough to make trades. I mean, there are a lot of moving parts, and you have to find a partner. The finances have to work out the way that
Well, you have
both
to know
teams
what you
want them to.
want too.
Right, exactly. So there's a
And
lot
what you
to it.
don't want.
Right, exactly. So and that's my point with like Laureano. Like, don't trade Laureano just for the sake of doing it. If you don't get a great offer for him, by all means, hold on to him next year, and he's your fourth outfielder. Awesome, right? I'm not at
Well,
all
you got
saying.
Tyler O'Neill under contract. You better have some
Well,
other
yeah.
options.
Oh, no question. No question. And that's why I want to see Dylan Beavers up here perhaps in August, right? And take a look at him. He's had a really nice year at AAA. That's why I'm hoping Heston Kjerstad can get going and you can get him back in the major leagues to see if some of the swing adjustments he's made have taken and lead to hopefully him being Kyle Stowers. Only you didn't trade him, right? So, you know, there's a lot that goes into this. And, you know, I think it's. But I just think it's important to recognize it's not going to fix all that ails them, right? This trade deadline is not going to fully optimize whatever their 2026 roster is going to look like. I mean, maybe they get a couple high minor league arms that project as bullpen pieces for them the next year or two. Maybe you get some teams, a guy that projects as a fourth outfielder for you, and maybe that empowers you to trade Laureano then, or maybe you get some team that wants Ramon Urias, and you get something that can be maybe a fifth starter for you come the second half of next year, right? I mean, there's a lot to this, but all that being said, I mean, these aren't blue chip trade chips that the Orioles have here, right? I mean, even Ryan O'Hearn is a early 30s DH, right? I mean, and I think they can get something nice for him, but you're not going to get a guy that's going to be, a top two or three prospect in your system, right? I mean, you're going to get some guy that maybe will be in your top 10, right? And you say, hey, that's an interesting prospect that they got. So I think it's just important to set reasonable expectations, understand that a lot goes into making these trades, understand that every name that we're talking about right now is not going to be dealt. I mean, heck, you and I don't know if you and I mentioned Brian Baker as a trade possibility once, and he ends up being the first one being dealt. Again, to your point, it's a unique circumstance because it was a draft pick that they were able to get for him, and they needed to do it before the draft, obviously, for that to work. But I think that's where just keep an eye on, the Kramers, the Laureanos, the Ariases, the guys that aren't free agents, but if a team makes a good enough offer, I think you at least need to have to consider it. But just knowing where they are, of those guys I just mentioned, Kramer, it's got to be something where I say, wow, you kind of have to do that because Dean Kramer is a fourth or fifth starter, and that team's giving you an offer that feels like they think Dean Kramer's more like a second or third starter, right?
Well, any of
So,
these things are plausible that you're
of
bringing up,
course.
right? Like the notion that Brian Baker was going to get dealt when you were in Wildwood and I was
Yeah,
taking a
we didn't
nap.
talk about that once.
Yeah, I mean, and the thought that something like that could be offered to get him a high second round draft pick where he could go out and take another Apple Bob at a young player, it is indicative that Mike Elias feels like he's going to be running the franchise and
Yeah,
is
I mean, at
running the
least one.
franchise and is buying green, but very, very green bananas when you're buying 37 draft picks and think that that's more important than having Brian Baker have 40 innings of relief pitching for you this year and for 3 more years.
Yeah, right. And look, I mean, it's and we talked about this, so I don't want to repeat myself too much, from a previous segment. But you also have to recognize, Brian Baker doesn't have the a tr this isn't a guy that's been an all-star reliever twice, in the way that you would think about Felix Bautista right now, who has 2 more years of team control. Bautista, when he's been healthy, has been dominant. Going back to 2022, when he was the setup man that year as a rookie. So that is a way different entity. It's a way different asset than Brian Baker, who's had 3 good months, right? And Baker was he was solid 2 years ago, 3 years ago. But you have to at least look at it, right? You have to at least consider it. And I'm in agreement with you. I mean, I don't think that means Elias is safe for 3 years, but I'm inclined to think, and I've always been inclined to think he's probably going to get this offseason to try to right the ship. And then if you and I are having the same conversation a year from now, then Mike Elias, if he's not Mike Rizzo in DC, he's heading that direction at that point in time. If they haven't turned things around, and we're not talking about a team that's in playoff contention, serious playoff contention, not on the fringe or anything like that. A team that's in first or second place a year from now. We're talking way differently about that. So, yeah, I mean, I think it probably reflects that Elias, is going to be around at least for one more winter, and let's see what happens, right? They drafted a couple pitchers earlier than they have in the past, not in the first round, but in the second and third round. They talk about that, and we're going to see what this offseason looks like. Does the approach change for the pitching? I've said it to you over and over. This has never been about, for me, go give a pitcher an 8-year deal, or that you have to draft a pitcher in the first round every year. But that middle ground has to be firmer footing than 1-year deals and reclamation projects. You can do those things, but you need to play the middle
Well, that's
class
where
market.
Rodriguez and Bradish didn't bloom, and Kramer's here, and Trevor Rogers was a piece this time last year that they were very enthusiastic about, that they're once again enthusiastic about. So they're, look, I'm not gloom and doom, but to your point,
There's a lot of work
I
that
don't
has to
have
be
to
done.
bring it up. You bring it up. They're a last place baseball team with a neophyte owner that looks lost. Did you see him speak last week about it was like he'd never read Lords of the Realm. You know what I'm saying? Like he is such a naive man for being a billionaire about any of this, and the people around him are naive, and Greg Bader is destroying the broadcasts. I mean, Kevin Brown's terrible all of a sudden. Ben McDonald feels disinterested in anything other than catching his flight. They're doing last place baseball. It's one giant sales piece. Melanie's running around on MLB doing the draft. I just the whole presentation is the television set for me. I don't go down there and give money, and if I did, that would have a higher expectation. If I spent $200 to go down on a Tuesday night to get a bobblehead, stand out 94 degrees, 15,000 people out on the walkway sweating their asses off to get a t-shirt. I mean, I don't. There's so many things fundamentally wrong with this franchise right now. I mean, really, in a lot of ways, including the $600 million they're about to spend, and how where Katie Griggs is hiding, and Elias firing the manager in last place, and high. There's a lot of really effed up things. You and I just you had to keep between the lines, and I look at the greater picture, how empty the stadium is, how empty their soul is, how empty it sort of is when I get outside of white people who like baseball, that they're just not an entity. They're not a thing in this city in a lot of places. And how they sought to be, how they won 2 years ago, how they've sort of screwed this part of it up. You know, they burped all this up now, the honeymoon and all that. But more than anything, I now have the tea leaves on the new ownership, and it stinks. This guy's terrible. And when he sits in front of cameras, not me, because they won't put him in front of me, because I'd ask real questions, and he can't talk about baseball because he doesn't know anything about baseball. And it comes really clear when he does open his mouth talking about, well, we all seem to come to the realization that, you know, we need a salary cap and we need some costs. Dude, I'm 50 years into this. Are you aware how stupid you sound when you say these things as a billionaire that's supposed to be the smartest guy in the room? That you're in as over your head as Schittler is running the country. Just no idea, like, what the job is and what the thing is with baseball, other than make me a bobblehead, I'll sign autographs, and I'll find capable, competent executives to come in, and it's the Orioles, and everybody's just going to come back at full price. I mean, I could go on, and I will, and I'll write about it because Elias looks like he's going to survive this, you know, through all of this. But they've got so much work to do on how awful a lot of it is. And you talked about streaming and you know, direct and like all of that. That's great. But when you got a last place baseball team, the bobblehead t-shirt thing is really amazing. How many, I called them sheeple over the weekend, and someone took a umbrage with that. I'm like, I'm a lifer fan, but I'm not going to stand in 100 degrees for 2.5 hours out in the sunlight to get a shirt or a hat that they've been promising for 3 months that you have to queue up like a farm animal to even get their giveaways. I mean, it's a crazy concept, but it's just the way we do things around here. It's the way baseball does things. It's our come on. I really try to think hard about what they do well. Like they have a great ballpark that's sort of 30 years old and whatever, and that's the draw and all of that. But I'm trying to think of what Baltimore offers to someone from Hagerstown that comes down here on a Tuesday afternoon, and why people were lined up to get the t-shirts last Tuesday when I had a dentist appointment downtown. And I see the Atlanta thing and the All-Star game this week, and they're about to get the All-Star game, right? Like that's going to happen soon. They're going to get a 28, 20, they're going to get a date, they're going to get a year. That's going to happen probably this calendar year, right?
Post renovations, right? I mean, it'll be 5 years from now, something
28,
like that.
29, whatever
Yeah,
year, they're going to get an
whatever year
All-Star
it is, it
game.
hasn't been given away
They're
yet.
going to have a North Star in all of this. And they
Massive
had a
dump.
good team for a couple of years. But I'm going to tell you what, and this is what I would tell Rubenstein. I would tell that prick Whistler, who I haven't talked to in 15 months after he shouted at me on the phone, and refused to meet with me. This has just been poor. I mean, it's just been. I've talked to Jim Palmer. I know how poor it is. I've talked to people on the inside and how poor it is. And it's last place in a lot of ways. A lot of
Yeah.
ways. Firing your manager on a Saturday and hiding till Tuesday. You can't keep my job. But then again, Greg Bader, Jennifer Grandal has a job, and she chased Jim Palmer out of the locker room. So I mean, I mean. Who's running the joint over there, Katie? Where are you hiding? And they're gonna have to go sell this business, sell these trades, sell the players, all of that. And I've got several friends that gave them money this year for the Birdland thing. Ain't giving them no Birdland money next year.
Yeah, I'm going to sum up a lot of what you just said with one thought, and it's pretty direct and clear cut. This team needs a Larry Lucchino or Dick Cass. And I'm not saying specifically either of those individuals, but they need that. Nestor, you and I both know there are plenty of owners in across sports who don't know a lick about the sport in which they own a franchise. And that can be totally fine, but that means you need a team president or a figurehead. And I don't mean this isn't me saying hire someone that is then in charge of baseball ops over Mike Elias. No, Larry Lucchino didn't pick baseball players. Dick Cass didn't sign free agents, but they were the face of the franchise from a business all-encompassing standpoint.
Katie Griggs, failure, babe.
And
No good. No good.
it's not,
You're into this. This is
I'm
lousy.
not even trying to make a commentary on her. Just
But
generally,
she is the Dick Cass. She was hired to be that.
she's not the team president, though. I mean, but my point is they need that. Whatever that looks like, they need that because I think that's something that would improve the rough edges of what Mike Elias is as a general manager, which, to your point, not having a press conference for 3 days after firing a manager, that's something that Larry Lucchino in Boston or Dick Cass for years and years and years running the Ravens, or go back to David Modell prior to that, that wouldn't have happened, right? So I think
David
that's.
Modell is really underrated, dude. I've sat here and watched
That's
this
why I
shit
wanted
for
to mention
50
him.
years, man. David Modell, to put some respect on his
But a
name.
lot of what a lot of what you just mentioned, and
I
look,
walked into rooms 30 times a year and bumped into him. Just bumped into him because he was out doing roosts. He was out doing fans.
sure.
He was out meeting people. Like,
Well,
just, I mean, it was really amazing. And I don't mean concerts or social events. I mean things selling his football team.
community, yeah. I think a lot of what you just mentioned, and look, you make a lot of very cogent, direct, good points in what you say there, that I think having that person in place, and I said this, my expectation, and it ended up being kind of sort of Katie Griggs, but that wasn't even her job description isn't exactly what we were talking about there,
Dude, I've had
was.
better people on this radio station the last 4 months. Like, if he had any stones and he really thought
A
something of
team
Louis
president.
Aparicio and thought of me, and sat with me for 2 hours, I would have written down, call Charles Steinberg,
Sure.
call Rick Vaughn, call John Maroon, call Janet Marie Smith, probably call Theo, right? Like, because Theo's got some Baltimore. Call Cal and Billy and sit with them. And it's nice you want to make nice with Kurt Schmoke. I do too. He wanted to legalize weed 40 years ago. He's at 50 years ago, ahead of time. Look, that's all great that you want figureheads and Grant Hill and you want black and white and female and you want pride and you want all. Get someone competent. How about that? I don't care if they're orange with purple specks.
You need
Get
boots on the ground.
bring a leader in. Go hire Moeller for crying out loud. He knows everybody in the community. He'd be, and I mean, he would never say a bad word about the Orioles. So, but there's a point where Angelos, when he bought the team, you know what? You probably don't know this. Maybe you do. He hired Ernie Accorsi for 5 minutes. Do you know that?
You told me that at some point in time, so
Ernie
yeah.
Accorsi and Grant Hill and these guys came in. And this is after he shit-canned Lucchino and mistreated. Peter lied to P Peter was just a horrible human. I mean, like, lied to everybody, including me, about everything. And there's an owner that never. By the way, I'm going off the rails, but I was sitting at Cooper's North on Sunday to watch the Sunday game, and it got rained on, right? So the rain delay, they showed the Frank Robinson statue speech. So it was 2012, April of 12. Lou Angelos is up on the podium. Peter never, ever, ever showed his face again after he got booed on the Ripken 2131 night 95. He never, ever, ever stood at a podium, showed up at a civic event, but chaired an event, never did anything in this community for 30 years. And now Moneybags has come in and he gives Papa waves and he sits at $200 a dinner a night things and sits in front of people with his little fisherman's cap on, looking like he's in going in style. But what Larry Lucchino did and what Dick Cass tried to do and what David, you get in front of this, man. You absolutely get in front of this and you're out at those things. And Peter didn't even do that when the statues were built. I saw Janet Marie, her hair was a little up. She's 13 years ago. She had a little older style hair. She looks more hip now. Work, maybe it's LA, the Hollywood thing out in LA and all that. But dude, I have a Rolodex that if I own the team and he put me in charge of the vice president of something operations of the community of the thing, I could bring him a dozen high integrity, high credibility, high intelligence, high emotional intelligence, high community knowledge, high baseball knowledge, high industry knowledge, high marketing knowledge, high media knowledge. And I could put together in I would hire Buck. Buck would bring credibility, even though he'd be a pain in the ass. You know, and I love you, Buck.
I know what you mean.
Dude, there are so many incredible people who care. Rick Vaughn cares so much that every time I call him, he comes on for an hour and offers free advice of 40 years of doing this. Every time I reach the Charles Steinberg, he comes on. He's running his own baseball team up in Worcester. John Maroon, he doesn't like talking about it because he hates last place and he's running the golf tournament this week out of the BMW. I saw him 2 weeks ago. These are competent, credible, incredible people, and none of them have gotten a phone call from anybody. And meanwhile, they're running Jim Palmer ragged and mistreating him. I mean, it's lousy, Luke. And I'm going to continue on. It's not just last place on the field, it's last place off the field. And that's got to change. And
Sure.
Mr. Rubenstein's not the guy who's going to change. I mean,
Well, and no, and that's why I said, look, there are plenty of owners over the history of professional sports who don't really know their sport. They don't really know what they are own, but some of them have had success. You know why? Because they hire the right people and they get out of the way. And that's where I kind of look at where the Orioles are, putting aside fans being ticked off right now. Look, fans have every right to be ticked off, right? I'm not trying to belittle that. But putting aside, if we're going to say Mike Elias is going to keep his job at least one more offseason, right? He's going to get one more year. Let's just for, humor me if you're listening right now. That idea of hiring a CEO, team president, a Larry Lucchino, Dick Cass, David Modell, whoever that is, that truly is in charge of everything. That doesn't mean Mike Elias is being, his legs are being cut. No, he's still going to be in charge of baseball operations, but you have someone at the very top who then knows the sport a little bit more. Larry Lucchino was not the Orioles general manager once upon a
Katie
time,
Griggs was running soccer 5 years ago.
but he understood the sport. He understood how
Dude, David
things
Rubenstein
work.
sat in front of a camera and talked about busting the union. Like, you know, seriously, that's what he talked about last week was changing the structure of compensation in Major League Baseball and acting like it's his idea. Like this
Well,
is a new idea.
and let me be
Like
clear. I
it's
mean,
insane how naive and no wonder the Whistler doesn't want to put me with this guy.
well,
He's a billionaire, but he ain't a genius.
well, and that right there just shows, look, every owner is going to have that position. Just about every owner is going to have that position. Am I right? I mean, we're talking about billionaires here. But from a front-facing public speaking standpoint, that's probably not what you want to be the lead for. So that's where it's
Well,
important.
Angelos was calling Selig a used car salesman. You know,
Right,
I mean,
right.
Angelos came in, and to
He
everyone who
was an
talked to
exception
me
at that point in time.
for everyone who talked to me about Peter Principles back in the day, and there were many people, the inside people said Peter had no idea how acrimonious the for being a union guy and being a guy who was a union guy all the way. He had no idea of the history. Peter bought the team to be the big dick in the city. That was his deal. He wanted a statue. He wanted to be Peter G. I'm rich and I own the Orioles and I'll mess them up as much as I wanna. And that's the way he lived his life. And he's dead. And, it is what it is. But I watched it all. And from the beginning, he never really understood baseball. And he certainly didn't understand at all the acrimony of the work stoppage, and he was in it and owned the team. And he was only in it 100 million deep, not 2 billion deep, the way this guy is. And it really scares me that this guy bought the team and has never read Lords of the Realm. Like, seriously, knowing that everyone I talk to is smart, including you, we're all like, oh, Mike Elias and next year and all that. Everyone tells me the same thing. Baseball's going to stop in 15 months and there's going to be a war, right?
Most
Everyone
likely, yeah.
believes that, right? Beyond all this
It seems
drafting
to
and
be.
all that, right?
Seems to be. I mean,
Yeah.
I don't want to say 100%, but it sure seems like everything is pointing to that, sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I hope Mr. Rubenstein's been briefed on that because that's the big problem,
Fair
right?
enough. Fair
That's
enough.
a bigger problem than Adley
But
Rutschman.
again, I'll and this is all I'll have to say on it, and I'm just repeating myself, but everything you just mentioned lends itself to the idea of, boy, a team president that Mike Elias is accountable to, who is not, again, not going to be his boss in the sense that he's like making trades going over his head or anything like. No one's talking about that. But Dick Cass did not overrule Ozzie Newsome on trades or drafting guys or anything like that. But when you looked at their chain of command, he was the team president. The Orioles, boy, it feels like they could really stand to have that. And again, I don't know who that person is. You've already thrown out names that would know better than me, but it feels like that would help them so much from a messaging standpoint, branding standpoint, certainly from a business standpoint, overseeing what's going to be $600 million in ballpark renovations, all of that. Right now it just that is lacking. There's no doubt about that.
I could
In
put
it.
together a dream team by Monday morning of six executives who would come in and fumigate the place and know everyone in the city and be instantly respected. Instantly respected. I could
Fair
do that.
enough.
I
Fair
could do
enough.
that on my own. If I had $2 billion and you gave me the kind of money it would take to hire the right executives, and I don't mean Gunnar Henderson money, I just mean credible money. Whatever it takes to get Jan and Marie out of LA, we're doing it. Whatever it takes to get people back here who care about the Orioles to run the Orioles and want to run it in Baltimore for Baltimore people, because that's primarily what it is and that's what it needs to be. It's just it breaks my heart. That's all I'm going to say. It's the All-Star break. Luke's here. We're watching baseball. I'm wearing my Major League Baseball Geddy Lee shirt. I'm excited about drinking some beer out at Eldersburg on Wednesday at 16:23. My man Mike McKelvin makes a delicious stout. I'm looking forward to it. I'll be out in Carroll County with lots of friends. John Allen, my longtime rock star buddy, will be out talking some music. And also my two pals, David Abrahams and Richard Abrahams, who attended Live Aid in London 40 years ago this week. I attended Live Aid in Philadelphia. We're going to come together and tell some stories about David Bowie. And by the way, I reposted the Thomas Dolby story about David Bowie. And a lot of people don't know Thomas Dolby lives here in Baltimore. He's a Baltimore guy. But he was the band leader for David Bowie at Live Aid in 1985. He got called in on assignment and he tells the most amazing stories. It's part of his act. He is touring. He's going to be at Ramstein. So if you're a Live Aid fan at all, you're really going to dig the programming that I got at Eldersburg. Also, we're going to talk beer and Vince Bagley and Chris Thomas and sports and Eldersburg and all that kind of stuff as well. Friday, we're going to talk about journalism with some deposed journalists. Cal, the recently fired cartoonist of the Baltimore Sun that you no longer subscribe to, is now doing cartoons out on the internet. He'll be with us on Friday, as will my cartoonist pal, Rasig, my lifer pal, whose children named me Nasty Nestor. You can see that in the doc. And also on Friday morning, a visit from an old friend, Dan Roderick's going to join us on Friday. We're going to talk about the city, talk about journalism. I'm probably going to turn it down to a decaf on Friday, to be honest with you. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Back to the Future scratch-offs. We will have these to give away as well. I am Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. It's the All-Star break. Dream a little, Baltimore.